Blog Talk Radio.
Good morning, everyone. This is Steve at AGLCA, and we have our usual home port crew. Roger and Beth and Janice are all here. Say hello, everybody.
Hello, everybody.
Hello. Hello.
And then our guests today are Chris and Elise Caldwell from Krapnik Chris Yacht Service, and they're going to be talking about cruising Florida's Treasure Coast, which is Palm Beach to Titusville. If possible, if you've got a copy of the Waterway Guide or a Skipper Bob book for anchoring on the ICW and or charts for Miami to Jacksonville, that would be useful. As usual, we encourage people to call in and ask questions, and we have a toll-free number, which is 877-497-1815. And when you call in, Beth will initially pick you up and then put you on with everybody else. So feel free to call. Chris and Elise, thanks for being on AGLCA Radio.
Good morning. Thanks so much for having us here. We are getting ready to go cruising again this afternoon, surprisingly enough, on the Treasure Coast of Florida. And we're going to be on a training trip with some future loopers. So right now we're in our home port of Harbor Isles Marina with our phone host, because we only have cell phones, Sarah Anderson. She's the marina manager here at Harbor Isles. So we wanted to thank her for allowing us this privilege of using her great office and looking out onto this fabulous marina. We want to share our experiences today about cruising, and just so that you have a little idea of why you should listen to us is because we've been liveaboards for 15 years while we're cruising, and we've cruised forever before that, up and down the East Coast and over from New Orleans, etc. So we've got a lot to share with you today.
Good. We have you scheduled to talk about the static mile system on the ICW. Why don't we go ahead and do that?
Okay. Chris, you want to tell them a little bit about that?
Okay, the static mile system makes figuring distances very easy, especially when you're following the intercoastal waterway that zigzags north, south, east, west, and all other angles. So what they've done is they've eliminated you having to use your dividers to figure out mileage or distance. The way the statute mile system or mile marker system works is the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers has designated Norfolk, Virginia as mile marker zero, technically Portsmouth, Virginia. But everybody says Norfolk is mile marker zero, and we are in Fort Pierce, which is our home port, in the Harbor Isles Marina, and our mile marker is 966. So very easy, you can just figure out, we're 966 miles from Norfolk, Virginia. So in an ideal world, if you traveled 100 miles per day, that would take you 9.5 days to get to Norfolk. Of course, that's an ideal world. I'm not talking about locks or bridges or having to stop overnight, anything of that nature.
Or trawler speed.
Or trawler speed or sailboat speed. The...
100 miles a day at trawler speed would be doing something.
100-mile day would be a long day at our trawler speed, right?
Yep.
The easy way to figure out how the mile marker system works is we're going to start today in Palm Beach, which is at mile marker 1018, which, again, is 1,018 miles south of Norfolk, Virginia. And that includes all of the zigzags on the waterway. So if you're using your Skipper Bob anchorage guide, they can show you where all the anchorages are by using the mile marker system. If you're using a waterway guide or a map tech or any other type of guidebook showing you anchorages or marina locations, they use the reference of mile markers. So if you're figuring that you're going to go 50 miles today, you can look ahead and see where you may want to anchor or where you may want to call a marina for reservations.
And Chris, can I stop you for 1 second?
Sure.
I was wondering if we could back up a little bit and just get a brief history of the Treasure Coast so we know the history that we're talking about as we travel.
Absolutely. When we started the Palm Beach mile marker, that's actually called the Palm Beaches. Then just above there starts the Treasure Coast. And all the different coasts of Florida are marked out that way. Above the Treasure Coast is the Space Coast. But what we're talking about today is the Spanish treasure fleet that unfortunately had met some storms that sunk the fleet off of the coast, and a lot of gold and other treasures, artifacts were discovered. That's how Mel Fisher got his big break. He found a lot off of the Treasure Coast, the Atocha. So there's a number of those kind of fleets that did sink, and even today, every now and again, someone will find a doubloon or find some part of the Spanish treasure fleet right off the coast because it's pretty shallow, pretty comfortable. I'm sorry.
Oh, that's amazing.
Yeah. Okay.
If you live down here or if you're cruising through here and you have local television and watching the news, I'm, without exaggerating, at least once per quarter, meaning every 3 months, you'll find somebody who's beachcombing looking for seashells, driftwood, or sea glass. They will find some treasure, especially after a very strong storm. Treasure sitting out there in the ocean in 20 feet of water, it just washes up on the beach. I remember recently somebody found a cross, a Christian cross, which was a necklace piece of jewelry. And about 6 months ago, somebody with a metal detector found a coin. So there still is treasure out there, and we still have treasure hunters living here, and you'll see them more active in the summertime.
Cool. So I'm going to remind everybody again, if you have a question for Chris and Elise, feel free to call in at 877-497-1815. And now Chris and Elise are going to take us in a mile by mile from Palm Beach to the Haulover.
Okay, so after we come into Palm Beach, maybe from the Bahamas, maybe we came up from the Keys, we then head up into the North Palm Beach Anchorage, which is at mile 1014. It's a really great small cove, but remember it can be very crowded in bad weather. So some of these places along the way are terrific, but everybody else thinks so too, so you got to be careful. Then we go a little bit further north, and you'll see the Jupiter Inlet at 1005. Now, we tend to call this an outlet rather than an inlet because we like to go out it in beautiful weather, but in rough weather, it's not an inlet to go in or out. There was a dredge working there very recently, just a few weeks ago, and that's maybe a little scary sometimes for people to come onto a dredge when they turn the corner, but it's a wonderful thing because that's making our waterways just that much deeper.
So, is that where we got grounded when we were in Florida?
No.
No.
You have,
remember, those of us who say we've never grounded are either lying or we didn't get away from the dock very far because sometimes it is a little shallow in the Florida area. But the dredges are great to see. Just don't get panicked. Know what you're looking for. The diamond shape is on one side, and the ball shapes are on the other side. The diamond shape is the side that you want to pass on. You want to go past them. And if you're not sure, just call them on the radio. They usually listen to both 16 and 13. Okay?
Moving north, so we're just passing Jupiter Inlet, which is at mile 1005. Moving on north, we're going to go through Hobe Sound. Other people may call it Hobie, H-O-B-E, Hobie or Hobe Sound. And this is a nice, quiet lagoon in between Jupiter Island and Tequesta.
I'm going to interject for a second. And if you're looking at your charts, or if you haven't right now, you want to look at them later, you'll see, like Chris called this, a nice, quiet lagoon. The Intercoastal Waterway was created by taking a lot of natural bodies of water and connecting them with canals from Norfolk all the way south to Miami. So some of these areas were wide open and big in appearance but very shallow, so they had to dredge along the way, and that's one of them in Hogue Sound. It's rather shallow outside of the channel, but if you follow the channel, you're in good stead.
Okay, moving on up Hogue Sound, we've got a real nice, quiet anchorage called Peck Lake. Looking on your Skipper Bob anchor guide or on your ICW flip chart, Peck Lake is at mile 993, and I want to draw attention to the charts. The chart says it's very shallow. Skipper Bob's got excellent directions of how to get into this anchorage. Although it's called Peck Lake, it's really not a lake. It's just a fat spot of the intercoastal waterway. To the eastern side of the intercoastal, you'll see a four-legged platform, which is a weather station for NOAA, National Oceanic Atmospheric Administration. So you'll know that you're in the right place, and I believe you have to turn east at green number 19, and then you idle around in your boat using your depth gauge to find a deep location to anchor the boat, again, depending on wind direction and your boat's draft. And once you anchor, you can launch your dinghy and go east to the shoreline, walk across the mangrove into the ocean. So you can go to a private ocean beach that actually is a state park.
And we're getting ready to get into turtle season, nesting season. So the park rangers have put some yellow tape and little pieces of wood around the nest so you won't disturb them, but it's just fascinating to see all of that in play. And if you get up really early in the morning and you go out onto the beach, sometimes you can actually see the track that the turtle made after she laid her eggs going back into the ocean. Very cool.
So this is a good place to spend the night. You can go beachcombing. You'll have very slight tide inside the intercoastal waterway and maybe a 18-inch to 2-foot tide on the ocean. So you can walk on the beach for sunset, and then you can go back to the beach the next morning for sunrise. There might be a new bunch of shells washed up on the beach. Also, you can witness if any sea turtles have crawled up and laid their eggs and made a big turtle nest. So after leaving Peck Lake, we're going to head north towards the Stewart area. Stewart is the city, but the navigational area is called the Crossroads.
Okay. The Crossroads are an interesting landmark. They go marking the intercoastal waterway, where Atlantic intercoastal waterway, where it intersects with the Okeechobee waterway. So if you were coming across when you're looping across the Okeechobee waterway, this is where you enter the intercoastal. And it can be rather shallow here because of the St. Lucie Inlet meeting with the Indian River meeting with the St. Lucie River. So there's a lot of currents moving through here. Not that it's difficult to traverse, you just have to pay very good attention to the channel markers, the navigation aids, as we are supposed to call them, and look carefully at your water, because you can actually see where the water gets shallow. You can see the wakes from other boats and how they start to turn and curl onto the shallow areas immediately outside of the channel. This is another area where there's been significant dredging over the years, and there's talk afoot right now to have some more dredging. In fact, the Notice to Mariners recently indicated that this is an area to be careful with the shoaling that happens around there. But again, we see dredging around there most recently in Manatee Pocket. So that's also another good anchorage that's slightly off of the intercoastal as you're going toward the Okeechobee Waterway at mile 987. Manatee Pocket, that's another great place. But let me back up and say the beauty of the Crossroads is if you have a calm day and it's nice, it's a pretty easy run out into the ocean then and across to the Bahamas as well from there. Just be aware of Rocky Point at 989, where there's a diamond marking the shoal off of Rocky Point. Diamonds tend to be a woman's best friend, right? But not necessarily the boat when she's a woman. So be careful of those diamonds. Diamonds can be dangerous. Okay, so if you want to turn into Manatee Pocket, the beauty of going into the pocket is that there are a few places where you can walk to. There's a free dinghy dock that you can go in there. Unfortunately, the local West Marine has moved, so they're a good distance away from this point. But there's another closer spot up in Fort Pierce if you need to get anything from them. We're going to be down that way for Easter. There's going to be a sunrise service at the Sandsprit Park right there by Manatee Pocket. So that's kind of a nice thing for any loopers to know about if they haven't gotten up that far.
Let me also mention the reason the Crossroads has that name is that's the intersection of the Okeechobee Waterway. So anybody coming around the loop from Mobile, Alabama, Clearwater, Florida, Tampa, Sarasota, Fort Myers, in Fort Myers, Florida, you've got the option to go south to the Keys or go east through the Okeechobee Waterway to the Crossroads to Stuart, Florida, and then you're in the Atlantic Intercoastal Waterway, and then you turn north.
Okay, so now we are through the Crossroads. We haven't bumped anywhere. We're admiring the gorgeous blue water because there's so much shoaling, which is what makes it so pretty. And we're in the St. Lucie River. Now, if you're not at 987, if you are not comfortable anchoring in Peck Lake or Manatee Pocket, for whatever reason, maybe there's a lot of people there those days or something along those lines, you can go up a little bit further up the St. Lucie River and go to a couple of different areas where you'll be in the lee of the land bluffs, because believe it or not, the land there in Florida is a little higher than elsewhere. It's just a little bit taller, so that whether you go to the east side of the intercoastal or the west side of the or Okeechobee waterway, you'll be in the lee of the wind. So that's kind of a nice little thing to remember. But you're going to get rocked by sport fish that go by and all the local fishermen that go by. So we prefer to stay in the intercoastal, the Atlantic intercoastal, and go a little bit further north to 981, where the Jensen Beach Bridge is. And if you are looking at your chart, you'll see there's some water.
Excuse me.
Ooh, bless you. There's some white water around there, which white water on a chart is a good thing. It's showing you deeper water compared to elsewhere, the blue water. And it's both on the north side and the south side of the bridge. So because of the land that juts out to support the bridge, that acts like a break, so your fetch isn't as long, so therefore you don't have as much wave action. The wind will be broken whether you've got it coming from the south or the north. You just pick which side of the bridge that you want to go on. Predominantly this time of year, we've got the northeast winds, not so much the south winds. So if you go in on the south side of the bridge, you need to enter a little bit further south at Red 220 because there's a little shoal above that. It's very easily observed. You can see it very clearly on the chart. And we've anchored there many times in some pretty stiff winds, and it's been good. It's also a pretty bridge at night. Now, once we get a little bit further north, there's what we're calling at 971 a wide spot on the intercoastal. Well, it's all relative, right? It's not super wide, but it's wide enough that if you needed to do something like fix your autopilot or swing your compass or just step off the waterway for a short time, you could do that. So long as you didn't have a strong wind, there's nothing really to block the wind there, but at least it's a little wide. Then we're coming up to a pretty famous area, 966, which is where we are right now. There's the Favor Cove Anchorage, and there's a couple of places where you can anchor there, both right outside of the cove, and then you can actually go all the way into the cove. Both areas are very comfortable for anchoring, and you may want the wind because it may be warm, so you stay outside of the cove around marker between 4 and 10. You'll see that, which is not the intercoastal. That's the side channel. Or you can go all the way into Faber Cove and have plenty enough swing room for a couple of boats. We're actually going to be doing a Power Squadron raft up there in another 2 weeks, I think it is. So it's kind of a nice place to anchor and be comfortable and hop over and go swimming. But this is also the location where we keep our boat, our home port, Harbor Isle Marina. And it's inside of a condo complex, which makes it, you don't even see it on the charts. That's the beauty of it. It's cut out of the right where the words Causeway Island are. It's so protected. This is our hurricane plan. We came into this marina so that we don't have an issue there. So I know sometimes people who are looping need to stop someplace, leave their boat, go home for a little while. That's also another good place where we've recommended people to come into because they're about an hour, 45 minutes from West Palm Airport. It's very protected. They don't have to worry so much about their boat. And though it's a fairly full marina, it's also got a few slips for transients, and they are open to the public for everyone to come in. I know that's kind of something new from when they first opened up. Okay, the other beauty about where we are is it's Fort Pierce, and in Fort Pierce there's so much to do, which is how we ended up staying here for a long time. There's the bike night every Thursday night downtown, so if you're a bike enthusiast, or if you've just been dreaming about owning, and I'm talking about a vroom vroom motorcycle bike.
I was going to ask you that.
Yep. On Saturday morning, they have the best farmers market and craft fair every Saturday morning year-round. It is terrific. You can get great fresh fruits and vegetables and listen to a little music. They always have a live band there. On every first Friday of the month, the city actually does a party with music and food and vendors downtown. And then the last Friday night of the month is a classic car show. So there's just something going on all the time. In addition to, there's a theater with all kinds of traveling talent. We actually saw the Smothers Brothers there and the Yo-Yo Man. Really like that. It's just a really feel-good, country kind of town, close to everything. So that's what we like about it. The West Marine, the Publix grocery store, CVS, Walgreens, all those places are less than a two-mile walk from right where we are. And, you know, when you're cruising, 2 miles is nothing, right? We can do that. And then, of course, lots of places around where you can get rental car if you need to. Oh, and you can walk to the beach. That's the really cool part about where we are. You can walk to the ocean if you want to and check out the inlet before you take your boat out and see, does it look good or not? Because, you know, we like to stay in the intercoastal when it's not nice out there, but if it is nice, it's a fun trip to take out in the ocean. Okay, I'm going to let Chris talk to you a little bit more.
Before I talk, I just wanted to thank Sarah Anderson, the marina manager at the Harbor Isles Marina, for allowing us to use the office and her telephone, and just let her say hi real quick.
Good morning. Wanted to welcome all the loopers listening and welcome them to come visit Harbor Isle Marina in Fort Pierce, Causeway Island, Florida. We've had some loopers before. We have loopers, I think, currently in the marina, and we'll look forward to seeing some pass this way again. Great, tranquil marina, and visit us as you're coming through, and Chris and Elise can attest for that.
Yep.
Okay. Thank you, Sarah.
The facility, Sarah, we really appreciate it.
Oh, enjoying it. Thank you.
Okay, continuing on the journey, there are other marinas in Fort Pierce. We've got the Fort Pierce City Marina, and we also have Harbortown Marina. These are the three largest and cruiser-friendly marinas for loopers traveling through. Let me also draw attention to mile 965, which is only 1 mile away from where we are at 966. 965 is the Fort Pierce Inlet. It's an excellent inlet. And I say it's an excellent inlet. I hear people say a Class A inlet. I call it a ship inlet. It's 30 feet deep, and it's got rock jetties on both sides, which means it is an any-weather inlet. So if you're in the Bahamas, the typical idea is to leave the United States at Palm Beach and go to the Bahamas, but when coming back to the United States, with the aid of the Gulf Stream, which flows north, come into Fort Pierce Inlet, which brings you about 60 miles further north than Palm Beach, and close to a country airport with a country customs, which makes no crowds, easy in and easy out.
Yeah, we like that. We like that. So when you're coming back from the Bahamas, it makes it real easy and convenient. You don't have to worry. Short cab right away. Okay. Now, all this we really enjoy along the Treasure Coast. And then we start heading up to Vero Beach, also known as Velcro Beach, at 951. And for any of you who have either done the loop in this part of the loop, or if you have just gone north or south, as many snowbirds do, you'll understand why we call it Velcro Beach. It is a place that once you come to, you don't want to leave. If you go to the mooring fields in Vero Beach City Marina, there's a free bus that comes and gets you and drives you to the three W's, the Walgreens, the West Marine, and the Walmart, all the important places that we need to go to as we're cruising. They also have a terrific Thanksgiving dinner, potluck, that if you've never been to, it's something that you absolutely want to make a point to go to in your travels. Be prepared when you come down for that time that you're going to be three to a mooring ball. Yes, that's right, three to a mooring ball. The location, again, is 951.9. So if you look at it, you'll see it's off of the intercoastal. It's very connected.
Can I ask a stupid question?
No stupid question.
When you do multiples on a mooring ball, you do them like a raft up?
What you do is the first person that gets there is the one that ties up. And each of the people tied to them, obviously if there's going to be three, one on each side for balance. And they try to put like boats with like boats. But I have also known them to put boats together when you request it. So if you have a buddy that you're traveling with and you want to moor up with them, that they'll usually accommodate you that way as well. And because it's so far off of, not that it's so far, but it's so protected off of the intercoastal, you have the ability to be blocked from the wind, from the current, and from any of the wakes that go past in the intercoastal. So you don't have to worry about being rafted up. We would never stay in a raft up at an anchorage overnight.
Yeah.
You would definitely be comfortable doing this as a on a mooring ball. So that's not a stupid question. That's a great question. I'm glad you asked it because it was my first question, too. How do they do that, you know?
Well, I guess they engineer the mooring balls so that they can take the load, but I don't know that I've ever seen that.
They do, and I've never heard an issue as a result of it, you know, a negative issue, so that's a good thing. People come back year after year and don't mind rafting up to strangers. Of course, by the time you're finished rafting up to them, they're not strangers anymore, right?
Yep.
Isn't that what it's about?
Yep.
And then there's a group that meets every Wednesday morning at a local Vero Beach restaurant that name escapes me right now, but the bus takes you right to it, and the group is called CLODS, Cruisers Living on Dirt. So many of us, Chris and I included, who moved off of our boats and into as the life of land dwellers, meet. And we let some of the people who are not land dwellers. Okay. I know we're getting close on time, so we'll keep moving forward. I know we could talk about Vero Beach forever.
Okay, continuing north, we're now at mile 946.5. In the Skipper Bob anchor book, that's called Pine Island. We call it Hole in the Wall. Sounds a little more Jesse James, a little more, I don't know, exciting. But the Hole in the Wall anchorage is a very good anchorage if you don't want to stay on a mooring ball in the Vero Beach area. Then this is free. It's an anchorage, not a mooring ball. And the Skipper Bob's anchor guide's got excellent instructions where to go and anchor. So following north of Hole in the Wall, 946, you'll see another inlet from the ocean called Sebastian Inlet, and that's at mile 935. That is pure local knowledge only. The bridge is only 30 feet tall, and the water is only 6 feet deep.
Sometimes.
Sometimes. So, enough said about that. Continuing north towards mile 925, and I'm going to flip my charts just to get a better visual. This is where the Indian River Lagoon and the Intracoastal Waterway is deeper on the right and left, or the east and west side of the Intracoastal Dredged Canal. So here, you'll see there's spoil islands both on the west side and on the east side. A spoil island is where the dredges have dredged up the shallow channel and deposited the spoils and made above water islands, so you can see them. And the advantage of these spoil islands is trees grow on them and then become windbreakers. So you can anchor anywhere you wish along this stretch of the Indian River Lagoon Intracoastal Waterway and just pick the side that you need to go. In the wintertime and in the spring, we still get northwest winds, so that means you'd want to go over to the western side and hide behind one of these spoil islands with some trees to block the wind. It's common practice. Continuing north there, we're looking at mile 914, which is the entrance to the Banana River at Dragon Point. Any of the people that have been cruising for a long time may remember the dragon, which was a concrete statue dragon, and we're sorry to report it's gone.
Yeah. Some new people bought the property and didn't like it. Imagine that.
So the dragon is gone, but a lot of other cruisers remembering this is the entrance into the Banana River, which was a prime location to anchor and watch the space shuttle launch. Well, since 9/11, anchoring in the Banana River is extremely controlled, and it's just easier to go somewhere else to anchor. We stay in the Indian River Lagoon rather than the Banana River. So looking at the mile marker 883 through 885, this is the new popular anchorage to watch space shuttle launches, and we were able to witness the Discovery launch about, I guess it's maybe 4 weeks ago now, and we videoed it, and we're fortunate enough that we were anchored so close that not only could we see it, not only could we hear it, but we could feel it. We could feel the thunder roaring in our chests. We were that close to the shuttle launch.
And if you have a few minutes, go to our website, CaptainChrisYachtServices.com, and there's a link that will take you to a video of the launch. It's kind of funny, so just sit back and have a cup of coffee when you're watching it. But it was just amazing to feel it. And we see it from Vero Beach all the time. So to see it that close was just very, very special.
Okay, we're wrapping up our 30 minutes and our 149-mile cruise. Want to draw attention to the Titusville Bridge at mile 878. Again, that's 878 miles south of Norfolk, Virginia. The Titusville Bridge on your charts might list it as being a drawbridge only 9 feet tall. Well, gang, it's gone.
Yay!
They put a 65-foot bridge up there. And any cruisers in the past few years might remember that the bridge broke down often. You really feel that they had budget to build the new bridge, but not budget to fix the old bridge. So now the problems are gone. 65 feet. And last on this cruise north through the Treasure Coast up to Titusville, we have mile 869, which is the Hollover Canal Bridge. And what's so important about this is a marine sanctuary that's on NASA property. So in this entire area, you're going to find kayakers, tubers, fishermen, fly fishermen, dolphins all over the place, manatees all over the place, seabirds all over the place. It's a beautiful, wonderful place. If you've got time, you may want to anchor or go into a marina in Titusville and use your dinghy and go up there and just putt-putt around. Outside of the channel, it's between 1 foot and 2 feet and 3 feet deep. So you don't want to anchor your big boat up there. Anchor your big boat in Titusville and then take your dinghy up. So what we've done in these 30 minutes is we've cruised the entire Treasure Coast from Palm Beach to Titusville, which is a total of 149 miles.
Hope you had some fun with us.
I've got a couple of questions for you all.
Okay.
And the first one is, how far away can you see the vehicle assembly building? Seems like it's all day.
Yeah, you do see it for a long time. But the Anchorage, where if you want to go up, and by the way, the latest shuttle launch has just been changed from April 19th to the 29th. Of course, they could change that again, too. But if you go up on the 29th, you can probably get within about 3 or 4 miles of the building. There's nothing blocking your vision if you anchor in at mile 883 in that 7-foot-deep white patch of water. There's nothing blocking you from seeing it. You can see the vehicle assembly building. You can see there's a water tower. And then way in the distance, if you got your binoculars, or if it's a clear day, you don't even need your binoculars, you can actually see the launch pad for the shuttle.
Well, the other thing is going to the NASA's tours is worthwhile doing.
Oh, it's fabulous. Absolutely fabulous.
The other question I had is bridges south of Stewart. It seems like there's one every half a mile.
Yes, there is.
And if you get going real slow.
there are a lot of manatee zones,
yep.
Which are slow zones, slow speed zones, and there are a lot of bridges. So, you know, you have to do it once, at least once. And some people really enjoy doing it because there's all kinds of new homes and old homes and just all kinds of interesting things to look at on the Intercoastal. But you are going to be slowing down a lot for these bridges that are, sometimes less than 18 feet tall. I mean, it's just amazing how low they are. But if you have a beautiful day, you can leave out from West Palm at trawler speed and come into Miami in one day. Comfortable.
Okay.
And avoid all those bridges. Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you, Chris and Elise.
It was our pleasure.
Next week, we have kind of an interesting show that's a little bit different. Sharon Starling is a female captain. I haven't heard her personally, but her writing is very funny. She's going to be talking about the challenges of a female captain and the experiences she's had with locks, flooded rivers, kids, parents, and pets. So tune in.
For those of you listening, we plug this every week, is if you're interested in a membership, if you go to our website, you can sign up, and it's www.greatloop.org. And go ahead, Janice.
All of our radio shows are already archived on that site. So if you're not available on Fridays at 10 o'clock Eastern Time, they're there for you to enjoy whenever you want. So make use of it, please. Feel free to go on.
And I think that's it. Thank you. Thank you all for participating in this.
Bye, everyone.
See you next week.
Bye, everybody.